As you know, this is the place where I say, turn with me, if you will, to the place where this week's Torah portion begins. It's an easy one to find, because it's right at the beginning of chapter 10 in the book of Exodus, or Shemot. And it is the place where the first few words are not that unique in Scripture. In other words, they're repeated over and over again. So it says, Amar Yahuwah al Moshe. So, and Yahuwah spoke to Moshe. And here's what he said, bow. So there's the word that is unique. That, of course, then becomes the name of this parsha. And basically, bow is one of those interesting Hebrew words. It can mean either go or come. And I guess one way to render both in English is to say, get yourself over unto Pharaoh. So, bow all Pharaoh. And why? Well, for I have hardened his heart, is the way it begins. Now, that is kind of an interesting take, too, because this is the first time in Scripture that we see Yah hardening Pharaoh's heart. Notice last time, he hardened his own heart. And in fact, there's two different ways to do it. The English is kind of ambiguous. But in Hebrew, he can strengthen his heart or he can make it stubborn. And he did both at different times. In this case, it is in fact Yahuwah that has made strong his heart. Has made stubborn his heart. He's kabodified his heart. And also the heart of his servants, he said. Why? So that I might show these my signs. Now that word sign, right, is oat. So these are O-T, my signs, in the midst of them. And here we're going to get a little bit more of some background. This is also going to fit with some of the things that are going to be real clear in this Torah portion. In other words, the setup for the Pesach, the Passover, and why. And here is one of those things that is going to resonate throughout. So you may tell your son, in the ears of your son and of your son's son, what I have done, what I have wrought upon Mitzrayim, and my signs which I have done among them. And you ready for this? Who's he addressing? Moses. So that you may know. Who? Moses. So that you may know, and arguably because Moses knows, we all do too, Ki Ani Yahuwah. And as I mentioned last week, over and over again, most English Bibles just plain get this wrong. It's not that I am the Lord, okay? That's a lousy translation. It is Ki Ani Yahuwah. And this, he says, is my name forever. This is the character that he's showing. This is the point of the story. And so it's vitally important, I suggest, that we get it right and understand that when he says, so that they will know my name is Yahuwah, that I am Yahuwah, I am. Then it probably is important. Yeah, I'm soft-pedaling that, as you know. It is vitally important, or he wouldn't make such a big deal about it. Okay, so Moshe and Aaron went in unto Pharaoh, and they said unto him, thus says Yahuwah, there's that name again, the Elohim of the Hebrews, how long are you going to refuse to humble yourself before me? Let my people go, that they might serve me. Otherwise, he says, if you just refuse to let my people go, behold, right, when is he going to do this? He set the pattern. Pharaoh did it himself. Tomorrow, I will bring locusts, arba, lots and lots of them, more than you can imagine, under your borders. And they're going to be so numerous, they will cover the face of the earth. No one will even be able to see the ground, ha'aretz. They'll eat what little remains of that which has escaped from the hail. In other words, I'm going to take care of whatever's left. And they'll eat every tree which grows for you out of the field. And not only that, your whole houses are going to be filled, the houses of all your servants, the houses of all the Egyptians, as nobody, not your fathers, nor your father's fathers have ever seen since the day they were upon the earth unto this day. So this sounds pretty grievous, and in fact it will be. And he turned and went out from Pharaoh. So Pharaoh's servants said unto him, now this is interesting as well. Remember, we've seen Pharaoh's servants beginning to get the message, and this week kind of this plague, the plague of locusts, seems to be the point at which they pretty well lay it out for him. How long will this man be a snare to us, they ask Pharaoh. Let these folks go. And now it says the men here, so the word here is ha'am, I think. Anashim, yep. That they may serve Yahuwah their El. Don't you know? Haven't you figured it out yet? Haven't you gotten through your head that literally they say Mitzrayim, Egypt, is destroyed? This is the first time this word is used in Scripture, but it's pretty serious. Moshe and Aaron were brought again unto Pharaoh, and he said to them this time, okay, all right, you went. No, he doesn't say it that way. He says, go serve Yahuwah your El. But who are the ones that need to go? So what it looks to me like we're seeing here is a little bit of what you call the dickering part of dealing with something you don't want to acknowledge. He's going to start dickering, and we'll see how it plays out. Moses says, well, we'll go with our old and with our young, with our sons and with our daughters, our flocks and our herds, all of us will go. For we must hold a feast, a chag, unto Yahuwah. And then he said, well, okay, so be Yahuwah with you, and I will let, now implications here from the Hebrew are, I will let only you go, and the men, and your little ones. See that evil is before your face. Now, not so, just only the men. So it's like he's thinking and dickering and changing, so you guys can go serve Yahuwah, because that's what you want. But they were driven out from Pharaoh's presence. Then, this time, Yahuwah says, all right, stretch out your hand over the land of Egypt for the locusts. Here they come. They'll come up upon the land of Egypt. They'll eat every herb out of the land, even all that the hail has left. So Moshe stretched forth his rod over the land of Mitzrayim, and Yahuwah brought an east wind upon the land all that day. And all that night, when it was morning, the east wind brought the locusts. And boy, did they come. The locusts went up over all of the land of Egypt. They rested in all the borders of Egypt. Really, very grievous were they. And before them, there were nothing like this ever. No such locusts as these, nor after them shall there be such. Because they covered the entire face of the whole earth, so that the land was darkened. They ate everything, literally everything, all the fruit of the trees that was left, all the herbs. There didn't remain a single green thing, either herb or tree of the field, throughout all the land of Egypt. They denuded everything. So Pharaoh then called to Moshe and Aaron, and this is interesting too, in haste. He isn't waiting. And he says, all right, I have sinned against Yahuwah, your El, and against you. So now, therefore, forgive, I pray you, my sin only this one time. This sounds like he's basically had a change of heart. Change of heart, right? And entreat Yahuwah your El, that he may take away from me this death only. And he went out from Pharaoh and entreated Yahuwah. And Yahuwah turned an exceedingly strong west wind, opposite direction, which drove the locusts right smack into the Red Sea. There remained not one locust in all the borders of Mitzrayim. Now, can you guess? We've already seen the precedent here, and this time it says, Yahuwah made chatzach. Yahuwah, in this case, strengthened Pharaoh's heart, so that he did not let the people of the children of Israel go. And then Yahuwah said unto Moshe, stretch out your hand towards heaven, that now this time there will be darkness over the land of Egypt. And choshech is an interesting word. So that's darkness. And this is darkness that's not just plain old, you know, lack of light. This is darkness that tells us which may be felt. And I've always been fascinated by that, you know, in terms of the physics of it. Because we tend to think of darkness as the absence of light. But this darkness which is felt is the presence of something else. It's almost like a dampening field that went in here. Something that is very, very different. Because, you know, why wouldn't they just light a candle? And the answer, well, we don't. We're not told. But darkness that can be felt for 3 days sounds like, that sounds like a real plague. And it also sounds like something that isn't alleviated by the sun coming up or by somebody lighting a candle. So Moshe stretched forth his hand towards heaven, and there was this thick darkness in all the land of Egypt for 3 days. They didn't see one another, nor did anyone get up from his place for 3 full days. But, remember, Yahuwah has been making a difference. The children of Israel, all of them, they had light in their dwellings. So Pharaoh called unto Moshe, and he said, go, serve Yahuwah. Only just let your flocks and your herds stay here. Let your little ones, they can go with you too. It's almost like, again, the dickering continues, and he knows that if they have to leave those kind of things behind, they would be forced to return. So he is trying to make sure that they don't go permanently, and we're going to see how that works out. Moshe said, you need to give us into our hand sacrifices and burnt offerings, things that we may sacrifice unto Yahuwah. Our cattle need to go with us. Not a hoof shall be left behind. And therefore, we must take all of this to serve Yahuwah, and we know not that which we will serve you until we get there. So basically he's saying, nope, that ain't going to work. We can take everything. And this time again, Yahuwah hearkened. He kazakified. He made strong Pharaoh's heart. And he did not, would not let them go. Then Pharaoh said, all right, get yourself away. Take heed to yourself. See my face no more. Pharaoh sounds like he's torqued here. For in the day that you see my face, you shall die. And that is a fateful comment as well. Moshe then responds, and he said, you've spoken well. I will see your face again no more. Now, what's interesting is the next chapter, chapter 11, starts, and it says, again, just like the Parsha started, Ve'amar Yahuwah al Moshe, and Yahuwah said unto Moshe the following. Got just one more plague here that I'm going to bring upon Pharaoh and upon Egypt. Afterwards, oh yeah, he will let you go. When he shall let you go, he will not only let you go, he will thrust you out altogether. The root word in Hebrew is shalach, to send away. He will do that. He'll say, get out of here. Now, at this point, I want to pause because it just says Moses has told Pharaoh, I will see your face again no more. What we're going to see here is it looks like this next six or seven verses happen in the presence of Pharaoh. And why I say that is because we're going to see that he goes out from Pharaoh after that in hot anger. So since he'd already said, I will see your face again no more, you've spoken well, he had to have been in the near vicinity, at least, while these verses happened. Okay, so here is what Yahuwah tells Moshe. Speak now in the ears of the people, and let them ask every man of his neighbor, every woman of her neighbor, jewels of silver, jewels of gold. And Yahuwah gave the people favor in the sight of the Egyptians. Moreover, this man Moshe was very great in the land of Egypt. In other words, he had a pretty sterling reputation by this point. Remember the old commercials for the brokerage house when... Who was it? Not Merrill Lynch. Anyway, somebody, when they speak, people listen. And obviously, when Moshe speaks, they listen. He was great in the sight of the people, in the sight of Pharaoh's servants, and basically in the entire land. So Moses said, this is what Yahuwah says. About midnight will I go out into the midst of Egypt, and all of the firstborn in the land of Egypt shall die. From the firstborn of Pharaoh that sits upon his throne, even unto the firstborn of the maidservant behind the mill, and all of the firstborn of cattle. There'll be a great cry throughout all the land of Egypt. Nothing like this has ever happened before, nor shall it ever be anything like this again. But against any of the children of Israel, not so much as a dog will whet his tongue against man or beast. This way, he says, you shall know that Yahuwah will put a difference. Now, the root word here is palah. He will make a difference between the sons of Egypt and the sons of Israel. Now, all the servants shall bow down unto me, and all these thy servants shall bow down unto me, and bow down to me, saying the following, get out, and all the people that follow you, and after that I will go out. And it says this, Moses then, he went out from Pharaoh in hot anger. So that's why I look at this and it suggests that since Moshe has said, you won't see my face again, and he then goes out from him in hot anger, that either this happened in another room and he didn't see his face, maybe he heard him, which is a possibility, but somehow or other, what is going on here is the last real encounter that we're going to see between Moses and Pharaoh, except... All right, so Yahuwah then says unto Moshe, Pharaoh's not going to listen. He will not hearken. He will not shamar unto you that my wonders may be multiplied in the land of Egypt. In other words, I still have something to show. Then Moshe and Aaron did all these wonders before Pharaoh, it says, and Yahuwah did. He hearkened. He made strong. He hardened. He made strong Pharaoh's heart. He didn't let the children of Israel go out of his land. Chapter 12 says, and here it is again, Ve'amar Yahuwah al Moshe, and Yahuwah spoke unto Moshe and unto Aaron in the land of Egypt, and he said, this month shall be unto you the beginning of months. This will be the first month of the year to you. Now, I have always read that and thought, isn't that interesting? This month is sometime in the spring, right? The month of Abib, and it's Abib that seems to reference the barley harvest being at a certain stage. In other words, it's going to be ready to harvest pretty soon. And that's how we know when this first month of the year is. And, you know, when I hear people talk about New Year's and the Jewish New Year's and so forth, Rosh Hashanah, I can't help but think, and you'll see that most of the rabbinic sources will acknowledge two different New Year's, one when they start the Torah over again and this one. But this is the one that scripturally says this will be a beginning of months to you, first month of the year to you. So I take that to heart personally. Speak you all, or speak you unto all of the congregation, Kol Edat, of the house of Israel, and say the following. In the 10th day of this month, they shall take every man a lamb, according to his father's house, a lamb for a household. So we start out taking a lamb. And we're going to later be told this can be a lamb of the kids or a lamb of the goats, but it's basically, it's a young animal, hooved, and either a goat or sheep. And if the household is too little for a lamb, well, then you can use the next door neighbor. He and his neighbor next to his house will take one according to the number of souls. So depending upon how many people you have that need to eat, that's how you decide if you need to go in with the neighbors. According to every man's eating, you'll make a count for the lamb. So essentially, again, we're talking about make sure there is enough and that there's not going to be a whole lot left over, because we know what's going to happen to that, or at least we're going to find out. Then it says this, and I always thought this was interesting, and I've got a little notation in my margin here. It was a lamb before, but now it's your lamb. Notice, your lamb, he says, shall be without blemish, a male of the first year. You take it from the sheep or from the goats, and you keep it unto the 14th day of the same month. So the lamb is going to be in the house for these days, from the 10th day through the 14th day of the month. And the whole assembly, Kol Edah, of the congregation of Israel, shall kill it at dusk. Now, I'll ask the question, I think this is one of those poignant things. We don't see a lot of emphasis on the 4 days here, but I can't help but think that, you know, having this little lamb around for 4 days, and now it's not just a lamb, it's your lamb, has got to make some kind of an impression upon the people who are going to see this lamb sacrificed and its blood put over the doorposts of their house. There's something very powerful in that symbolism, and there should be, right? Then they shall take of that blood and put it on the two side posts on the lintel and the houses where upon the houses wherein they shall eat it. So they take the blood of the lamb and they put it on the lintel of the door. And then they shall eat the flesh in that night, roasted with fire, unleavened bread, with bitter herbs, they shall eat it. Now, all of this, of course, is the thing that we now recognize as the elements that are memorialized by the time called Pesach. Don't eat it raw, nor sodden at all with water, but roasted with fire, its head, with its legs, and with the inner parts thereof. And you shall let nothing of it remain until morning. Anything that remains until the morning, you shall burn with fire. So you eat what you need to eat, and what's left over is burned with fire. And here's how you shall eat it, he says, with your loins girded, shoes on your feet, your staff in your hand, and you eat it in haste. It is the Pesach le-Yehuah, the Passover of Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh. Because I, he says, will go through the land of Mitzrayim on that night, and will smite all of the firstborn in the land of Mitzrayim, both man and beast, and against all of the gods, the fake gods, the Elohim, the so-called mighty ones of Mitzrayim, will I execute judgments. Here it comes, the signature line, Ki Ani Yehuah. Notice, when you see him executing judgment against false gods, no wonder we see the signature line. The blood, it says, shall be to you for a token upon the houses where you are. When I see the blood, I will pass over you. And there will be no plague upon you to destroy you when I, in fact, smite the land of Mitzrayim. This day, he says, shall be unto you for a memorial. Now, listen to this and note the importance of this and note how, essentially, it's been lost, and what I refer to for this reason, or among others, as the whore church, has essentially de-emphasized something, and listen what he says instead. This day shall be unto you for a memorial. You shall keep it, as the word here in Hebrew is hag, as a hag unto Yahuwah, a feast, throughout your generations. Does that still apply? You betcha. Throughout your generations? Are we generations? You bet. So, yes, it applies. You shall keep it as a feast by an ordinance olam, forever. What's not clear about that? Well, just wait. 7 days, he says, you shall eat unleavened bread. So, bread that is not allowed to leaven. Howbeit, on the first day, you will put away all of the leaven out of your houses, because anybody that eats leavened bread from that first day until the seventh day, this is serious, that soul shall be cut off from Israel. He will cut that soul, that nefesh, that life, that person off from Israel. Want to be grafted in? Better be careful. And in the first day, you will have a holy convocation. And the seventh day, also a holy convocation. In other words, these days are to be set apart. What does it say? No manner of work shall be done in them. Well, with one exception, it says, save that which every man must eat. That alone may be done by you. So you're allowed to take and prepare meals. But and sometimes you'll hear these Sabbaths, this is one of several that are in his calendar, referred to as cooking Sabbaths, because the prohibition does not include not making any food or meal preparation, but it does say no manner of work. So it doesn't say no work whatsoever, but certainly not the kind of work that would get people paid or we would say with pecuniary interest involved. All right, you shall observe, he says, this feast of unleavened bread. For in this selfsame day have I brought you, your hosts, out of the land of Mitzrayim. Therefore, you shall observe this day. Let's see here. Does this sound familiar? You shall observe this day throughout your generations by an ordinance. The word is chuk, or chukat, olam, an ordinance forever. Now, that's the second time he's used very similar wording. Throughout your generations, by an ordinance, forever. In the first month, on the 14th day of the month. Now, by the way, one other quick comment. A lot of you have heard this before. When you see that word huchat or huk in Scripture, it is it's the kind of thing which is basically a commandment, and you do it. Why? Because I say so. Sometimes we say, okay, this makes sense, I can understand, you know, thou shalt not murder, why he would say that, because I don't want to be murdered. So those are called commandments, or there's a different Hebrew word that's used, mishpatim sometimes, or mitzvot. They are not, however, this kind of thing, which is an ordinance or a statute. And actually, statute is usually the word that's used to translate chuk into English. So I question that a bit, just because it's not consistent. But what does he say? This is one of those things. Do it because I say so. It's an ordinance or a statute forever. In the first month, on the 14th day of the month, at evening, at sundown, you shall eat unleavened bread until the 21st day of that month at evening. 7 days, there will be no leaven found in your houses. And here is another repetition. Because whoever eats that which is leavened, that soul shall be cut off from the congregation of Israel, whether he's a sojourner, a stranger, somebody that's there, or one that is homeborn, born in the land. And notice that they're not in the land yet, so this is clearly to apply in the future, and arguably it's going to apply in the very, very, very near future at this point, but we are to remember it and understand it is throughout your generations forever. That soul, the penalty, is to be cut off, whether you're a sojourner or homeborn. You shall eat nothing leavened in all your habitations. You are to eat only unleavened bread. Now, the word here in Hebrew, this is a great word, is chametz. So chametz is this word that means essentially unleavened bread. And literally, chametz has to do with leavening agent, in particular, the kind of leavening agent that's alive, or yeast, we would call it now. It's lacking this yeast thing in the bread. And that is something that as we go through and talk more about Passover, it'll make more sense. And obviously there's lots of discussion about this and what constitutes leavened bread and unleavened bread. Anyway, Moshe, it says, called for the elders of Israel. He said to them, draw out, get yourselves your lambs according to your families, and kill the Passover lamb. Then take a bunch of hyssop and dip it in the blood that's in the basin. Strike the lintel and the two side posts with that blood that's in the basin. So they're going to strike literally a kind of a chet. In Hebrew, that the modern chet, which is literally two uprights and then a cross part over them, with the blood in the basin, and none of you shall go out of the door of your house until morning. So the message here is, you want to live, you stay in the house, stay under the covering of the blood during this time that I will pass over. But those that are outside of the house are at grave peril. Because Yahuwah, it says, will pass through to smite the Egyptians. When he sees the blood on that lintel, on the two side posts, Yahuwah will pass over the door and will not suffer the destroyer to come into your houses to smite you. And he says, oh, wait a second, does this sound familiar? I think we've heard this before. As a matter of fact, folks, we've heard it twice before. This is the third time in this one portion describing this one obviously very important activity that he has repeated an almost identical statement of the command. You shall observe this thing as a chukat olam. There's an ordinance to you and to your sons throughout your generations, right? To you and to your sons, in this case, forever. So it's the third time, and I keep wanting to notice this and say, it really does, it bugs me when I hear the whore church say, well, we got better feasts, this all Old Testament stuff, it's all done away with. What an unmitigated lie from the pit of hell! Shame on you, you lying sons of Satan, you, for saying that which he says not once, not twice, but three separate times is a command throughout your generations for you and your sons' sons forever. And how dare you turn your back on him and call him a liar? Now, furthermore, this, I think, is that helps to bring home the point that is made in the next line here. It shall come to pass, he says, when your children say to you, hey, what's the meaning of this service? Well, then you say the following. You don't say it's done away with, it's Old Testament, in other words. You say this. It is the sacrifice of the Pesach Le-Yahuwah. It is his, Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh's Pesach, Passover. And in that time, he passed over the houses of the B'nai Israel, the children of Israel in Egypt, when he smote the Egyptians, and he delivered our houses. And the people, it says, bowed their head and worshipped. Well, what else? The children of Israel, the B'nai Israel, they went out, and they did so. As Yahuwah commanded, Moshe and Aaron, well, so did they. Kind of simple, isn't it? They commanded. He commanded, they did. So it came to pass then at midnight on that night that Yahuwah smote all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, from the firstborn of Pharaoh that sat on the throne unto the firstborn of the captive that was down in the dungeon, as well as the firstborn of all of the cattle. And in this case, it sounds like that means all of the animals, literally, in the land. Now, the next line is kind of fascinating. There's a bit of a Rashiism here, and his take, I think, it seems almost trivial, but it's kind of fascinating. He adds the words that, in understanding what this is saying in the Hebrew, says Pharaoh rose up in the night. Pharaoh rose up in the night. All right? Pharaoh rose up, and Rashi basically says, look, when you look at the Hebrew, it says that it didn't use words that would normally be used in context. He woke up in a panic. He woke up in a cold sweat. He woke up in fear. No, he slept well. In other words, what he's meaning is he woke up from his bed. He had slept well. He had slept soundly. Well, up until this point. He and all of his servants and all of the people of Mitzrayim, all the Egyptians. But there was a great cry in Egypt, for there was not a single house in which there wasn't someone dead. And he called for Moshe and Aaron by night, and he said, rise up, get out of here. So he, Pharaoh, calls for Moshe and Aaron. He tells them, rise up, go forth from among my people, both you and the B'nai Israel, the children, and go, serve Yahuwah as you've said. Take your flocks, take your herds, as you've said, be gone. Oh yeah, and bless me too, please. The Egyptians were urgent upon the people. Get them out of there, send them out in haste, for they said, we are literally all dead men. And it's a great, you know, we're dead already. We're walking dead. And the people took their dough before it was leavened. So historically and traditionally, they'll say, well, there's a maximum time limit, and it's slightly different for Passover. Want to make sure that no yeast in the air that's just floating around gets in the dough and starts to leaven it. So it's just been sitting there for literally minutes. They took it, and they bound it up in their clothes, put it on their shoulders, and they headed out. As the children of Israel did, according to the word of Moshe, they asked for the Egyptians, hey, give us what you got, some jewels of silver and of gold and clothing and so forth. And Yahuwah, it says, gave the people favor in the sight of the Egyptians, so that they let them have whatever they asked. And it says they despoiled the Egyptians. They literally cleaned them out. And this, as it turns out, is going to be important for a number of reasons. One, and arguably the one that is most relevant here at this point, because Yahuwah had said, he had told Abraham this is what was going to happen, that they would go out with all of these things. So the B'nai Israel, it says, journeyed from the place of Ramses to Sukkot, about 600,000 men on foot, as well as children. And you may have heard the numbers. There is lots of speculation historically, but certainly there were lots more women and children and older folks and so forth. Later on, we're going to get, in the book of Numbers, we're going to get a count, and we're going to see how many there were of men of fighting age. And the answer is, well, given that that's a fraction of the total, probably there were between 2 and 3 million souls that headed out. That's a huge crowd. But 600,000 men on foot in addition to children. As that mixed multitude went up along with them, they all had flocks, herds, and a whole lot of cattle. So this is a huge, literally, a city-sized entourage with cattle and everything. And they baked unleavened bread, cakes of that dough, which they brought forth out of Egypt, because it wasn't leavened, and they were thrust out of Egypt. They couldn't tarry, got to get out of here, and they had not prepared for themselves any victuals. So they didn't take time to pack up, you know, a week's worth of stuff like they were backpacking. They just headed up, moved on out. Now it says, the time that the B'nai Israel dwelt in Egypt. Now, a lot of the sages will add that looks like this just essentially is saying Egypt, meaning in particular the land outside of the land. That would include, because the land wasn't yet their land, Canaan. So Egypt and Canaan was 430 years. And that is consistent with what we see in Scripture. So it seems like it's a reasonable understanding, in other words. Came to pass, then at the end of that 430 years, even the selfsame day it came to pass, that all of the host of Yahuwah went out from the land of Egypt. It was a night of watching unto Yahuwah for bringing him out of the land of Egypt. And that's an interesting take, and I've heard some commentary that you may find interesting from rabbis over the years. This same night, they say, and a lot of folks will therefore, as a tradition, they'll stay up all night on Passover. And here's why. That same night, it says, is, present tense, a night of watching unto Yahuwah for all of the B'nai Israel throughout their generations. So I don't know that that means that we are commanded to stay up all night, but I do think that the implication here is clear. Whatever this means, it is a night of watching for all of the B'nai Israel, and that would include us, especially if we think we should be grafted in, throughout all their generations. Yahuwah then said to Moshe and unto Aaron, this is the ordinance, the huchat, remember that's a do it because I say so, of the Passover. No alien shall eat thereof. But every man's servant that is bought with silver, when you've circumcised him, then he shall eat thereof. Now we're going to see that this is an interesting take too. The people who shall eat, including servants of those that are not native to the land but that are brought in, they shall be circumcised. Then they can have the Passover. A sojourner and a hired servant, nope, they shall not eat thereof. In one house it shall be eaten, then you do not carry anything out of the flesh abroad from the house. In other words, what's ever left over, you don't take out. No leftovers. Nor shall you break a bone thereof. And if you remember, that was important when we get to the time of Yeshua, that reference having to do with the picture of the Passover lamb is certainly important too. Kol edat, all of the congregation of Israel shall keep it. Now, when a stranger, it says, sojourns with you, and he'd like to keep the Passover of Yahuwah, let all of his males be circumcised. Then let him come near and eat it, and he shall be as one that is born in the land. He will be just like a homeborn, but no uncircumcised person shall eat of it. And then we get this, and this is going to be repeated in Torah elsewhere. This is the first place we see this, and it's an interesting, it's an interesting statement. It says, Torah achat, one, that's that second word there, achat, one instruction, one law is how some render it, but it's an instruction, which is, of course, bigger than law even, shall be to him that is homeborn and unto the stranger that sojourns among you. So you have one instruction, applies to everybody. Thus, he says, did all of the B'nai Israel, as Yahuwah commanded Moshe and Aaron, so did they. And it came to pass in that selfsame day that Yahuwah did, in fact, bring the B'nai Israel out of the land of Mitzrayim by their hosts. So here is literally the final of the 10 plagues. Sometimes you'll hear me say the three sets of three plus one, because clearly there is something different about this 10th plague, a number of things that are different, but it doesn't fit in the pattern of the other three sets of three that you see. And in fact, one of the differences that Yahuwah himself says, Israel is my firstborn, and we're going to see that reference, this concept of the firstborn and the importance play out here and indeed throughout Scripture. And it's going to play out in other places in the Torah very soon as well. Okay, chapter 13, just the first half here is the final part of this Parsha. And again, it begins by Yahuwah speaking unto Moshe, and here's what he said. Set apart, sanctify. Kadosh is the word, right? That means to set apart. To set apart all of the firstborn. We've just had this plague that afflicted the firstborn. Those were the ones that were literally passed over, because those are the ones that, had they not been under the blood, would have died. Sanctify, set apart, kadosh. Make kadosh unto me all of the firstborn. Whatever opens the womb among the children of Israel, whether it's man or even beast, it is mine. So for those of us that are firstborn, we belong to him. Moshe said unto the people, remember Zakar this day, in which you came out from Egypt, out of the house of bondage, because by strength of hand Yahuwah brought you out from this place, and there shall be no leavened bread eaten. This day you go forth in the month of Abib. And it shall be that when Yahuwah brings you into the land of these people, right, the Canaanite, the Hittite, the Amorite, the Hivite, the Jebusite, which he swore unto your fathers to give you, a land flowing with milk and honey, that you shall keep this service in this month. 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread, and in the seventh day you shall have a chag, a feast unto Yahuwah. Unleavened bread shall be eaten throughout the 7 days. There will be no leavened bread seen with you, nor shall there be any leaven seen with you in all of your borders. And you shall tell your son. And this is an interesting word in the Hebrew here. It's ve-hagadita. Ve-hagadita. To your sons. Now, if you recognize that root word, and you shall tell, you will hear the term Haggadah, or some will say Haggadah or Haggadah, but anyway, just that root word there is used here, and it is the same word that is called the service. So the service of the Passover is often called the Haggadah or the Haggadah, and it is what? It's the telling. So that is literally what the word means, and that is exactly what the commandment is. You shall tell your son in that day. This is why, it's because of this, which Yahuwah did for me when I came forth out of Egypt. And you'll even see some renderings into the English that's kind of fascinating. Some translations will say the better way to say this is, it is for this purpose that Yahuwah took all of us, the congregation, the mixed multitude, Kol Israel, out of the land of Mitzrayim, so that we would know, so that we would be witnesses. And again, Ki Ani Yahuwah, so that we would see his character in what he has done. And I think that is vitally important, and also vital to remember, especially now. This, it says, shall be an oath, a sign unto you upon your hand, and for a memorial between your eyes, that the Torah of Yahuwah may be in your mouth. The instruction of Yahuwah may be in your mouth. We're to teach. He makes that point clear. The whole point of the telling is to teach. Teach your sons. Teach us the things that the whore church has claimed was done away with. Horrible lie. That the Torah, the instruction of Yahuwah, may be in your mouth, because with a strong hand Yahuwah brought you out of bondage, out of Mitzrayim. Therefore, it says, you shall keep. Now, the Hebrew word here is shamar, the root word. So you'll hear Shema Israel, shamar, right? Depending upon the conjugation, it's either Shema or shamar, or you can put different suffixes to meet the you all forms of the word. But essentially, keep, hear, and do. So when you see the word shamar or shema, it means more than just listen or hear. It means keep, hear, and do, because this is an action word, and it is a word that is more than just listen to it. It's when you listen and when you do it, you have fulfilled the meaning of the verb. So keep this ordinance in its season from year to year. That sounds kind of like what we heard three different times, right? And it shall be that when Yahuwah shall bring you into the land of the Canaanite, as he swore unto you and your fathers, and he gives it to you, that you will set apart unto Yahuwah, this is the firstborn thing again, all that open the womb, every firstling that is a male, which you have coming of a beast. In other words, even if it comes out of an animal, that belongs to Yahuwah. Whatever it is that is the firstborn of a female that opens the womb. Now, the firstling of an ass, you shall redeem with a lamb. And if you won't redeem it, then you shall break its neck. And of the firstborn of men among all your sons, you shall redeem. Now, that's an interesting terminology. We're going to see more about that in instruction to come. Now, it shall be, he says, that when your son comes to you, and he asks you in this time ahead, and he says, hey, what is this? Then you tell him, by strength of hand, Yahuwah brought us out from Egypt, from the house of bondage. And it came to pass, when Pharaoh would hardly let us go, that Yahuwah slew all of the firstborn in the land of Mitzrayim, both the firstborn of man and the firstborn of beast. Therefore, you tell your son, I sacrifice to Yahuwah all that open the womb if they're males. But the firstborn of my sons, of course, I redeem. And this, it says, shall be for a sign, an oat upon your hand, and for frontlets between your eyes. There's a phrase that we've heard before. For by strength of hand, and here is the final verse of the Torah portion, Parsha Bo, because by strength of hand, Yahuwah brought us forth out of Mitzrayim.